Let's continue genetics. Page 46, title of page, mutations. Box, causes of mutations. There are several reasons. Well, first of all, what is a mutation? A mutation is a sudden random change in the DNA base sequence. This can happen by pure chance without any external influence, or it can happen with an increased probability due to high energy radiation, ultraviolet radiation, X-rays, for example, or certain mutagenic chemicals. These are substances that cause the mistakes in the DNA. Mutations can be either base substitution mutations, and this means that a base pair on the DNA is exchanged to another base pair. So for example, an AT base pair is changed to AGC base pair, or even a TA base pair. Okay, so because AT is not the same as TA, because it's on the complementary strand, the base. So in this case, these base substitution mutations will then result, or could possibly result, in a wrong amino acid to be built in during translation. There are two more boxes over here with examples of intensive radiation. One was the nuclear accident at Chernobyl in 1986, April 1986. Side issue which I remember quite well because I was 14 years of age at that time. Close parenthesis. I remember that we had a problem because we could not eat many of the foods and vegetables that were sold at that time because they were radioactively contaminated. And because radioactive contamination, of course, of the food would have meant that increased mutations would have taken place, and this can lead to an increase in cancer because mutations can cause cancer. The second example is the bombing of Hiroshima. The nuclear bombs have released great amounts of radioactivity, and this too increases the mutations and therefore also cancer. Maybe you just read through these examples over here. Maybe one term that I need to explain over here is called bioaccumulation. This is in the nuclear accident, the Chernobyl box on the left side. Bioaccumulation, that is the third bullet point from the top, is a problem because what happens is that even if the overall radiation is very low in the environment, some foods and vegetables and animals are very radioactive because they concentrate the radioactivity. Okay, so that is also a problem. The overall environmental radioactivity being comparatively low, but certain foods have a significantly higher radioactivity because they accumulate or build up the radioactivity, the radioactive substances. Let's move on. So just please read through the whole thing. Leukemia as an example of a blood cancer. Okay, and you can see that if the radiation goes up, then the probability of leukemia also goes up. Okay, and also other cancers. So there is clearly a direct correlation. Page 47, genes and alleles. Genes and chromosomes. So what you see in this genes and chromosomes box, you see the picture of a chromosome. Okay, and this is chromosome 11. And you see that there it's striped like with white and black patterns. And the different parts of the chromosome carry different genes. All chromosomes 11, human chromosomes 11, carry the same genes, but maybe not the same alleles. So what does this mean, the gene? So in this example, it's the locus of the gene for beta polypeptide of hemoglobin. So all of the chromosomes 11 have at this place the code for the beta polypeptide of hemoglobin. Okay, but it could be, of course, that maybe in some cases that this polypeptide is this gene is defective. This can be, but it doesn't matter. Over at this point, you still find the gene for hemoglobin. Okay, so over there, another term, genetics, is the study of variation and inheritance. Okay, so this is simply an introductory definition over here. Next box, numbers of genes. First of all, the total number of genes in humans is around 23,000. The exact number has been adapted over the years. As with more discoveries, you can also see that certain bacteria like E. coli only has around 3,000 genes. So different organisms have a different number of genes. And of course, bacteria having anyway a smaller genome size also have a lower number of genes. Okay, but you do not. You can also see that rice, for example, has a significantly higher number of genes. So this is basically simply an overview that the number of genes in an organism can vary. Next box, alleles. Okay, now that is the point. What is the difference between a gene and an allele? An allele is a different forms or versions of a gene. Okay, so for example, the gene for eye color might have the alleles for blue eyes and brown eyes. Okay, so that is the specific, how shall I say, the specific forms of a gene are referred to as alleles. In the classical genetics part, for example, the big C and the lowercase c in the case of colorblindness, for example, you have a colorblindness gene, and either this gene is intact, then you have a capital C, or you have it's defective, then you have a lowercase c, okay? And the question is now, how are these alleles different from each other? The alleles are different because they differ in a few, maybe one, at least one, or a very few bases. Okay, some of the DNA sequence is mostly the same, but some of the bases might be different. Okay, sickle cell anemia is the next example over here on page 47 on the right. And what we have over here right now is two examples. In one case where you have red blood cells which are intact, and the other one where there's a mutation in the hemoglobin gene, and therefore you have red blood cells which do not look normal but are sickle shaped. So let's start at the very top. On the top in this box, on the top left, it says you're part of HbA. HbA is hemoglobin A, that is basically the intact one. Okay, the intact polypeptide chain, and you see that the DNA codes for CTC, and the complementary strand is GAG. This is the original DNA, and then mRNA is made. This process is called transcription. That's further down. We follow the arrow down. So you can see that the top strand over here, CTC, is copied, and we have GAG. And this GAG now codes for the amino acid glutamic acid. During translation on the ribosome, glutamic acid is built in, and that's the correct amino acid. Of course, what is not shown is that there are many amino acids built in, but we'll just focus on this particular one right now, okay? And then the phenotype is that the red blood cells look normal, okay? Now, it can be that there is a so-called a base substitution mutation, and in this case, the CTC is mutated to CAC, and if we now have a transcription occurring, then the CAC is transcribed, and we have an mRNA which makes GUG. So the mistake is passed on into the mRNA, and therefore at the ribosome, the wrong amino acid, namely valine, is built into the hemoglobin molecule, and therefore we have defective red blood cells. Okay, so this is an example of a base substitution mutation, and how a base substitution mutation can lead to a wrong amino acid being built in. Aside information right now, what you can do simply for pure interest is you can go to Wikipedia and you can Google the different human chromosomes, and they always have a chromosome map simply to see what genes can be found on a chromosome. Another thing that I might want to say about the chromosome on the top left, why is the sister chromatid not shown? I mean, you only see this one. Why is the second sister chromatid not shown? Well, because it contains exactly the same genes, of course. It's exactly an identical copy, and it's totally not necessary. Yeah, it's simply an exact copy, okay? So we flip page. Page 48, we talk about gene sequences. And over here, we continue to talk about chromosomes. And the thing is if you have the sequence of a gene, then you can search for it in a database, an online database, and then will tell you whether this gene already exists. And so if you, for example, do a little bit of research and you find a couple of base sequences and you want to know, okay, has this base sequence already been discovered and does it belong to a certain gene, you go into the computer, you make an online database search, and then hopefully, or hopefully not, depends if you want to have something newly discovered, and you hope, of course, that it's not in the database yet, but you're kind of looking for something in the database, and if you don't find it in the database, then maybe you've discovered a new DNA sequence, okay? Or if it's in the database, then you know what your gene is actually like, what it actually does, because somebody else already sequenced it. So the next thing is the following: gene loci and protein products. A loci is the location or the place of a gene on a chromosome, okay? So, and this is simply a recommendation of what you might do. You can go, you can search for OMIM, that's Online Mendelian Inheritance in Man. That's that's a database, and you can then make a gene search, and then you can essentially have a look at the different genes and their loci. The different genes, all what they do is they make different proteins, of course. And there is an example over here. You have, simply to explain a little bit, the notation over here in the big chromosome, it says they all starts with a 11. And what does this mean? 11 means that we're talking about human chromosome number 11. Okay, and then P and Q. P refers to the smaller arm of the chromosome, and the Q to the larger one, because the place where the chromosome is so thin, that's the place of the centromere. Okay, and then you have the different positions on the chromosome, 15.4, 15.2, and so on. Okay, so that basically this is how you find your way around on a chromosome. My advice is you simply try this out, or you have a look at some of the chromosome maps online. So the next one, comparing base sequences of genes, is also an instruction on how you can search, make an online database search for base sequences in gene bank. And then it simply is a short introduction over here on how to do that. Yeah, you can copy paste the sequences, and then you can either make comparison studies or statistical studies. So for example, what they've done here at the very bottom here is you have Ursus maritimus and Homo sapiens. So Ursus, that is a bear. You have a base sequence of a bear compared to Homo sapiens, a human being. Pan, that's a chimpanzee, and so on. Okay. And Drosophila, at the very number 9 at the very bottom, that is a fruit fly. So what you can do is you can compare the different base sequences of the different organisms, and you can align them, and by comparing them, the more similar the base sequences are, the more related the organisms are to each other. It's a little bit simplified, I have to admit, but that's basically what you can do with that. You can make direct DNA comparisons between different organisms. Okay, we move on. Page 49, PCR. The heading is DNA technology, PCR, the polymerase chain reaction. Basically, PCR is a system of copying DNA in vitro without the help of cells. Normally, cells do cell replication, they copy the DNA. But what PCR does is you can copy DNA exponentially without any cells. You just mix together the chemicals, and then you let it run, and then the DNA is copied. So if you have one piece of DNA, it's copied, you've got two, you copy it again, you've got 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, and so on. It's an exponential growth. And how does this work here? What we do is the following. At the very top box is DNA is heated to 95 degrees. This separates the two DNA strands. So we're not using helicase to separate the DNA strands, but we're using a high temperature. And then what happens is after we've separated, we're lowering the temperature again. And this will now allow the copying of the DNA to take place. So-called primers have to bind to the DNA at 53 degrees. These primers indicate where the where the DNA should be started, should start to be copied. And then we go up to the 73 degrees again, and this is when the polymerase starts copying the DNA. And then we've got two copies, then we heat it up again to separate it, we cool it down to 53 degrees to allow the so-called the RNA primers to bind. They basically tell the whole reaction where to copy the DNA. And then we go to 73, and then it's copied again. And the change of temperature is done by a so-called thermocycler. It's a device that you have to buy. It's standing in the laboratory. You've got to mix the chemicals together. You put your little tube with all the chemicals and your DNA, original DNA, into this machine. You press the start button, and then you wait for a few hours, and then out comes the finished DNA. The thing is the following. The finished DNA cannot be seen because it is transparent. It's too small. So you would now like to see how big are the DNAs, what DNA do we actually have. And so we have gel electrophoresis, which is there to visualize the DNA, to make the DNA visible. And gel electrophoresis separates the DNA based on their charge. DNA is negatively charged, and their size. And what we do over here in the drawing on the right, what we have is the following. On the right is the drawing, but on the left side of this device, we have a negative electrode, and on the right side, we have a positive electrode. And it says your DNA sample is placed into the so-called into the well. This is a little bit a small indentation inside the gel. And then we apply a positive and a negative voltage, and then the negative DNA starts to move towards the positive pole. However, the small pieces move faster in the gel than the large pieces. So this means that the small pieces will travel in a certain amount of time further than the large pieces. And this is how we separate it. So if we have two different pieces of DNA mixed together, for example, then they're going to be separated into a larger and a smaller one, okay? Because the larger one is going to be able to move faster. It's a little bit the analogy that I have is you have got two teams holding hands. Basically people just in pairs of two holding their hands, and they have to run through the forest. And the other team, basically they have 50 people holding their hands, and they have to run through the forest. Which team is going to end up on the other side of the forest first? Well, of course, those that are only two holding their hands, because it's easier for them to maneuver their way around the trees. So, gene sequencing technology, page 49 on the bottom. You see a whole photograph over here with a whole whole bunch of computers and sequencing devices. And what they're doing is they were sequencing, determining the base sequence of the whole human genome. So they used cells that they were growing in the laboratory, human cells, and then they basically determined the base sequence of that and put everything into a database. And they completed that several years ago. Next one, DNA profiling, page 50. DNA profiling is a way where we use PCR and gel electrophoresis, which I just talked about, to identify people, okay? So it's used in forensics a lot. And the thing is it's to, can you not simply sequence the DNA and just simply determine the direct base sequence of a sample of DNA? You could do that, it's way too expensive, okay? So if you use the PCR and the gel electrophoresis, it's much faster, cheaper, and easier, and good enough to basically to compare the DNA. There's no need to compare the individual base sequence of people, while even though that is theoretically possible. Okay, but you don't want to invest more money than you need. The so-called short tandem repeats, the so-called STRs in human beings, and however, they are different from person to person. And what we're doing is we are now taking a sample from a person. So for example, by collecting it from the person's mouth, and we are then doing a PCR with that. Okay. And then we get a certain PCR result, which we can observe using gel electrophoresis. And then we're taking another sample from a crime site, for example. We're doing the same PCR, and if we get the same result, then the DNA was the same. Okay? But if the people, if this DNA is not the same, then we get a different result. So for forensic investigations, that's the next box. This is used, and I'm simply going to explain to you the gel over here. So what we have is we have A, B, and S labeled, okay? S is the DNA of the suspect, and A and B are the DNA samples of the victims, okay? And what you can see very briefly is that the A and B, the black bands that you see, okay, do not match with those of the suspect, S. Yeah, so the suspect is not guilty, because those bands do not match, okay? Just look at A and B, and you see those in the case in lane A, you see those two further down, those two bands, and in B you have the four bands. But look at the bands in suspect S. They're two bands. Well, they're at totally different places. So suspect S could not have been the murderer in this case. Okay. Paternity investigations. It's another example over there. Is who is the father? Because what you do is you compare the DNA of the child with the DNA of a possible father, and if it matches, if there's an overlap, then of course there is the person was the father. You, of course, we understand the DNA of the child is different than the DNA of the father, but there are the so-called the Y chromosome. If it's a boy, well, that must be from the father, definitely. Okay. So there is a possibility here to also do paternity investigations. Who is the father of the child? One last comment is simply by having a sample of DNA and doing a PCR or doing a DNA profiling, you do not automatically know who the person is. You always need something to compare the DNA to. So the next one, page 51, gene transfer, genetic transfer. And first of all, one thing that you have to understand is the genetic code is universal. What does this mean? If I take the DNA of one organism and put it into another organism, then this other organism is able to make the same protein because the base sequences result in the same protein or polypeptide, in the same polypeptide in different organisms. In this case, we're now having a look at how we can make insulin in bacteria, human insulin in bacteria. What I have to do is I have to introduce the human insulin DNA into bacterium. So what I do is the following. Number one, I will simply explain this. It might be slightly more complex because it requires a little bit of higher level understanding as well. Number one, mRNA, messenger RNA, is extracted from a human cell, and this mRNA is converted to DNA. You might now wonder, why do we not simply take the DNA directly from the person? This has practical reasons, because the DNA also contains so-called introns, junk DNA, which is not necessary, and this is not the case if you have mRNA. Because the RNA really only contains that information without junk that you need. So we take the mRNA, we make DNA, and then we're making so-called sticky ends. So you see that over here on number 3, the ends of this DNA molecule now have single-stranded parts, and these are called the sticky ends. We continue with number 4. Number 4 is a plasmid. Plasmids are small ring-shaped DNA molecules, and we're using an enzyme called a restriction enzyme to cut open the plasmid to make also sticky ends. And the thing is now the following, that if we mix now the insulin DNA with the sticky ends, with the plasmid with the sticky ends, if the sticky ends are compatible with each other, and with compatible I mean if they are if they are complementary with each other, then the DNA of the insulin and it will go into the cut open plasmid. And then we are there where we have number 6. Okay, we have to add an enzyme called ligase, which is 0.7, and this basically seals the bonds so that the insulin DNA is now stably integrated into the plasmid. We take this stable DNA plasmid now and mix it with bacteria, and some of the bacteria will take up the plasmid and make insulin. And then I will cultivate these bacteria, and I will then have my human insulin being made in bacteria. You might now wonder, why do we not simply take the human DNA and put it directly into bacteria? But this has certain technical reasons, because if you take only directly, let's say, the insulin DNA from step 2 and put it into bacteria, then the bacteria are going to not accept it, because it's going to think that it's foreign DNA. And it's going to break it down, it's going to think it's a DNA of a virus, it's going to attack the DNA. The bacteria don't like that, but if you put it into a plasmid first, then the bacteria will accept it more readily. So that's beyond the scope of this book I'm just explaining, okay? So what we're doing right now is it's possible to also modify agricultural crops, that's the next box, foreign DNA. And what they have done is they have made so-called BT maize, and this is basically like this. You introduce a gene of a toxin into the maize, that's a corn, and therefore this maize will produce a poison which is going to kill certain insects. So it's like the plant is able to make its own pesticide. And there is, however, a problem with that. I mean, the advantages, of course, are you have a higher crop yield, you don't have to spray the field with chemicals. There is a disadvantage, however, there's several disadvantages. It's the one possibility could be that not only pests are killed, the bugs, but also, for example, bees could be killed. It might also be difficult to contain the genetic, the gene, and it might be passed on from maize to other plants, and we don't want that. And the third problem is that certain insects might develop a resistance against the toxin, still survive, and then you have the foreign DNA on the field, and it's not working anymore, and then basically the cycle starts again. So, next page, page 52, cloning. People sometimes confuse genetic or gene transfer with cloning. What is a clone? A clone is a genetically identical organism. So strictly speaking, if you have a cell which divides, then the two cells are clones of each other. They do not necessarily have to look the same. Identical twins genetically are clones to each other. They do not necessarily always have to look the same. They might slightly look different because of environmental reasons. Also plants, for example, just because they're genetically the same does not mean that they have the same size, because growing conditions are also important. So what we now do is the following. What we would like to do is we would like to clone animals. For example, farm animals, and that's called a somatic cell nuclear transfer. And what we do is the following: we want to take the nucleus of an adult organism, just like a sheep, and grow a second genetically identical sheep out of that. When we take a body cell of a sheep, then we're using a differentiated cell, and these differentiated cells will not form an embryo automatically because they're differentiated and they have lost, they're not stem cells anymore. So what we need is we need a stem cell. And with this stem cell, we can then make a new organism. So how do we do that? How can we reprogram a body cell, a skin cell, for example, to become a stem cell? So this is what they have done a couple of years ago. I think in 1995, 1996, Dolly the sheep was actually made. So what they do is the cloning of adult animals using differentiated cells. That's the box in the middle. I'm going to explain again the drawing. You take a cell from the udder of a donor adult and you culture it in the laboratory. And then from a second sheep, you take an unfertilized egg cell. And then what you do is the following. You remove the nucleus of this egg cell and throw it away. And you insert the nucleus of the donor cell. Okay, so it's possible either to inject the nucleus or you can fuse the cells together. That's also possible. Okay, in this case they fused the egg cell without the nucleus with the other cell, and this converted the whole thing into a stem cell, which could then be transplanted into a surrogate mother. And after some time, there was a lamb born, and this lamb was genetically identical to the donor cell of the donor sheep who donated the DNA. Sometimes there are questions. They're going to ask you to who is this sheep a clone to? Is it a clone of the sheep which donated the DNA, or the one which donated the egg cell? Well, of course, the one which donated the DNA. Okay. So this is the first sheep up there, okay? So, and then page 52 on the bottom, there is again another experiment over here, which talks about the importance of independent and dependent variables and controlled variables, okay? Using an example over here. So what they're, if you want to investigate factors affecting the rooting in stem cutlings, now you might wonder, what does this have to do actually with the topic of genetics? Well, this is a form of asexual reproduction a little bit. So just like, strictly speaking, the cloning of adult animals is also a form of asexual reproduction. So if you cut off a branch somewhere from a certain plant, and if you plant it into the ground, you have a genetically identical copy of the plant. Okay, and that is basically also considered cloning. Okay, so this was it. This was chapter 3 right now. Quick run through chapter 3. And yeah, have a nice day.